This is Rock and Roll Grad School with your hosts, Heidi Hedquist and Luke Poling. They were dreaming when they wrote this. Forgive them if it goes astray.
Hello, kitties. We are going to have a good time together. We are talking with one of the two members of Three Pairs of Boots, which, if you can do that math.
I was going to say, that's a whole lot of math right there.
Yeah, you should be producing the show, frankly.
Right.
Let's talk about your weekend, your first festival post-clampdown.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying first, like, actual festival, the Motley Crue,
correct,
Poison, Def Leppard.
Yes.
Joan Jett was not a traditional. So what's the name of the festival again?
Bourbon and Beyond.
Okay. So which one are you going for?
Funnily enough, the Beyond.
Okay. Excellent.
I don't like bourbon.
I mean, you're missing out, frankly.
Well, I will certainly. I was just invited because apparently I've used Zell enough that I qualified for a blind bourbon tasting at this event because Zell is the online sponsor. But I can't bring a plus one. So it's me by myself drinking bourbon, which, I mean.
You say that like that's a bad thing.
Well, no, it's probably a great thing. Get me away from my friends for a little bit. But I guess I'll have to.
And drinking with someone you care about.
Right?
Yes.
See what that's all about. But no, I am here for the music.
Right. Now, if you had gone for the whole weekend, which is Thursday mm-hmm. through Sunday, which is asking a lot of somebody.
Very big festival, considering I've never heard of it until this year.
Yeah. Thursday's Jack White, Alanis Morissette. Friday, and these are just the headliners. There are others underneath. Friday, Kings of Leon, Brandi Carlile, missing that one. Mm-hmm. Saturday, you are going for the Pearl Jam, Greta Van Fleet day.
Crowded House.
Wait, I'm sorry?
Crowded House.
Well, yes, well.
Obviously.
Neil. And they say Liam of Crowded House. Is Liam?
I think he has been playing with them.
Okay. St. Vincent, maybe, not sure if you're going to be able to make that one.
I know. Potentially, but.
Depends on the stage. Drive-By Truckers, that would be fun.
They could be fun too, but, you know, I have very specific things in mind that I have to
right.
see.
So right.
So I have to make sure.
Yeah. And then, unfortunately, you're going to miss Sunday, headlined by the Doobies, so.
I know. I mean, we were torn on which days to go, because.
That's not a tear at all.
No.
For me, at least.
Oh, to go see the Doobies?
Yeah, I might cut out early. Thursday and Friday sound lovely.
Saturday doesn't sound lovely?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Saturday was taken as a given. Yeah.
Yeah. No, Thursday and Friday do sound lovely. But, see, the thing that's interesting, too, that I'm trying to figure out is. There's also at 1:30,
mm-hmm.
Sam 4 and Neil Finn from 1:30 to 2.
Okay.
So I don't know what that is.
So there's multiple Finnage.
But I feel like there's multiple Finnage.
Mm.
And then the Neil and Liam are 5:20 to 6:20.
Okay.
And then Greta Van Fleet, same stage, 7:40 to 8:55. But Pearl Jam is on the other stage from 9 to 11.
Mm.
They obviously have to get there.
Right. So depending on how large this thing is, maybe a little Greta Van Fleet and then run over to Pearl Jam, or just stake your claim and elbow people
right.
at Pearl Jam for hours and hours.
There's a lot to decide, because then there's also a battle with Greta Van Fleet.
Ooh.
From 4:15 to 4:45.
With music, words, or
I don't know,
some sort of what? Medieval,
right?
Yeah,
they're from Frankenmuth. Is it like a fried chicken situation?
Ooh, that would be good. I mean, even I would pay money to see, like, I don't know, Jack White and Alanis Morissette like joust each other.
That would be amazing if we could do like a bourbon Ren Fest hybrid.
Something for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
By everyone, we mean us.
So of course.
Congratulations on the record.
Oh, thank you.
I was listening to it, you know, obviously in preparation for this. And especially today, especially this afternoon, it just feels like the right thing at the right time.
Ah.
Which I don't know how much of that was your intention, that you were sitting there thinking about me on a Friday afternoon when you recorded it. But I appreciate the thought.
Ah, okay. Yeah. We might have... You want to have like pictures of you posted all around the studio.
That would be ideal, yes. Where did you write these songs as a collection of new songs, or were they things that you had been working on in various stages over the past, you know, year, I think it was since the last record, 2 years?
The Long Rider record came out in 2021. So all of these songs on the record were written since the last one. Mm-hmm. So they were kind of written as a collection kind of over the same span of time. It wasn't like some of these were sitting around from 4 years ago or 3 years ago. We've actually done, this is our third album in 4 years. We're kind of on a songwriting mission. Mm-hmm. So yeah, these all came about over the last, they were really written all, of course, in 2021, because the record was finished by January of 2022.
And you've been just sort of teasing out little bits and pieces over the past few months.
You know, I've learned, I've been playing for a long time, and so is my spouse, who's the singer, in various formats. We played in rock bands for a number of years. And working with our project manager, Aaron Anderson, who runs Olivia Management out of Nashville, we've been working with her for the last 4 years, and she has taught me so much about how to release an album. Mm-hmm. Because we're not on a label, we're essentially our own label and, you know, self-financed. When we did the first album, I had finished it and then was sort of like, okay, now what? Because back then it's like, I knew how to release the record. I could upload through CD Baby and push it out to all the various places, but it would just get out there and no one would pay attention. It's not enough to just release a record. So not that it's easy to make a record. It's actually a laborious, marathon event to, go from writing songs that get reported on, on my voice memo with my wife singing and us figuring out whether the song is right and what key and all that kind of stuff, to a finished product. But making the record actually, I think, is the easiest part of the process. So what I've learned now, Mighty Love was a record that was finished in basically December of 2021. And it takes approximately 9 months after the record's finished to go through the various stages that are needed to release a record. You get your photographer, you go take your pictures, then you send the pictures over to the designer. They design the cover and the single covers and whatever promo photos. Then you get your team in place, the publicist, the radio promoter, the video promoter, etc. And you set up a schedule to release a couple of songs. Even though the Americana format doesn't really revolve around singles per se, it's an album oriented format, but you do release a few songs prior. So we started releasing, a song 2 months ago, then a month ago, and then there's another one coming out next week, and the record comes out in September. So it's this whole process, this timeline, that for the first two records I was always behind. This one I'm finally kind of getting it right. In fact, I have, weekly meetings. I talk with Aaron about, where we are, what we have to do. And this one, we find that as we're discussing various things, there have not been any emergencies or we forgot something. So that feels really good because I'm learning. That's the story. I'm learning how to release a record.
Yeah, I finally figured this out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you enjoy any of that? Or is it just one of the evils of the business, and if you want to have the joy of recording, you got to deal with the 9 months of runway and meetings and photo shoots and all of that?
I think I like all of it. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy doing all the interviews, the podcast interviews. I like talking to people because, pretty much everybody that I've done interviews with so far, everybody's a music fan. So it's really nice to talk to people. I don't mind. I like working with the various people who jump on board, the publicist and whatever, and our radio promoter. So I don't mind the business part. I think the business in general is not a great business in terms of if you want to make a living at it. Mm-hmm. I love playing. We love writing and recording and working in the studio. And when it goes well, we really like performing live, as you know, also. So I do enjoy all of it, I think, except for the real hardcore business part. You know, at times in the past, we've had contractual obligations. We were, you know, at one point we were in a rock band together, and we were signed to a label, and the people who ran the label, I had zero respect for their musical opinions. So it's,
and you're
tough.
Not the first to have that reaction to those people.
Yeah. So for the most part, I do enjoy all the pieces to the puzzle. Fortunately, at least with three pairs of boots so far, I haven't had to deal with any industry types who I did not respect their opinions.
You mentioned a minute ago about that you guys are on a musical mission. How do you define that? What are you trying to bring to the masses?
Well, I think it's more a mission of trying to create a legacy, because I had, it took us a while to, first of all, it took us a while to find this particular format, the Americana format. It was always there, or certainly was always there for me, but I wasn't necessarily a big country music fan 10 or 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Not that we're country, but there's a very Western country leaning to what we're doing. But I discovered that, you know, earlier influences in my playing career, like the Byrds, Buffalo Springfield, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Joni Mitchell, Bob Dylan, all these people, really, all, you know, sort of surfaced. And they surfaced when we came to this conclusion that we actually did an Americana tune for a placement opportunity, and I was like, oh, this is so good. I love doing this. I think this is in our wheelhouse. So we wrote a few songs with a friend, and we're like, yeah, like this feels great. Like this is what we should be doing. You know, playing music, you're sort of discovering, you know, who you are, what you do best, what feels right. So it was interesting how we sort of stumbled into this, that, you know, sort of led us to quickly, you know, loving this, loving writing songs in this genre. And before, Laura used to write a lot of the stuff that we did with the rock band. I would write music. I never wrote lyrics. And now I'm writing the bulk of the songs, lyrics and music. And I've kind of really found that I enjoy the challenge. But the mission part, I think, also is not only because we really think that this is in our wheelhouse and really suits our talents, this Americana format, but I also had a job, like another job. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was more than a job. I had another business. So I was running, essentially, I was working two businesses at the same time, full time. I was being a musician, playing in, you know, various projects with Laura, and at the same time working my day job, which didn't really allow me enough time to truly produce as much output as I wanted to. Because my other job was very, very time consuming at various times of the year. So it's like, I look at this sort of as three pairs of boots, is like I'm on a songwriting mission, because I was sort of being held back by my day job, paying the bills. We have, you know, a child, a son, who's now 18 and going off to college in a week. But, you know, you spend a lot of time taking care of that person and bringing them up, and, you know, that the daily output of raising a kid and, you know, making enough money to survive. And for me, it was, you know, the day job and the night job. Mm-hmm. So I really, we're planning on putting out a record every year for the next couple of years. We're already, and this is how it's been the last few years. Mighty Love, the new record, is coming out September. Songs are being released now. We're 4 to 5 months into writing and recording the next record. So while part of my brain is in Mighty Love, the other part's in bits and pieces with the four new songs that I'm in various stages of recording. You know, one song needs the rest of the background vocals. One song needs some vocals at the very end of the song. Two songs need drums and keys. Like, they're just, you know, that's just the process. So I'm sort of constantly in last year's music and this year's music these days. So the mission is really just, I really want to put out content. I love songwriting, and I really, like, I think we've discovered something that's really great for us. And so I just want to put out as much as I can. So that's kind of the mission, I suspect, how I would look at it.
Do you think, kind of cutting backward, leaving the other job and sort of having the extra time and the extra bandwidth, both mentally and physically, do you think that's the thing that really got you writing lyrics? Or is there something else where you were like, I think I kind of am ready? Because obviously it's a journey for any artist to kind of get to the point where they feel comfortable with what they're doing and then playing around with that and seeing where they can take that from there.
I think it was that I was ready.
Mm-hmm.
I did a lot of writing in my other job. And so I got very good at writing and editing. And to a certain extent, writing lyrics, certainly in the country folk genre, I think it does require a fair amount of editing. You start with a big idea, and then you pare it down. You only have 4+ minutes to get across a complete idea. You want to tell a story, but you don't want to be too literal. You want to leave things open to interpretation. So it's quite challenging. I think having all that experience of writing helped me when I realized, okay, I'm ready for this. I, you know, initially tried and wrote a few songs, not knowing whether I could really be a lyric writer. And they worked, and they came out pretty good. So I thought, okay, I can do this. Mm-hmm. Now, I know already kind of what my strengths and weaknesses are. I am not a poet like Dylan or Joni Mitchell. I am more of a storyteller. My wife, who is also a songwriter, but she doesn't write as many. She's a quality songwriter. So when she does write songs, they seem to always make it on the record.
Right.
I'm a quantity songwriter. So, you know, of the, you know, 10 or 11 songs on the record last year, Mighty Love, for example, I probably wrote 20 plus songs, and 3 of the songs are on the record. The lyrics were written by a good friend of ours, who's kind of, she is a poet and filmmaker and many talents that she has. So that's kind of how the lyric thing started. It wasn't more, oh, I got rid of this job, now I can do this. It was more that we were settling into this whole, you know, mishmash of Americana, this sort of equal parts country, rock, folk, sort of all pushed together. And I realized that I had the skill and the confidence finally to write lyrics. I wasn't confident before, I don't think. And Laura was such a good songwriter. So I think those two things maybe held me back. And then as this project kind of started to really bubble up to the surface, I was able to discover that, oh, I can actually do this.
And it seems like you kind of hit that vein of, I can do this, and I want to do this more and more and more. And just that being able to keep going back to that and again, kind of just see what you can do with this.
I mean, now it's, you know, my phone is by my bed. Like, I will wake up in the middle of the night, like, you know, with like some lyric in my head, you know, like, oh, better write it down. I have learned that when something like that comes along, I have to write it down immediately.
So you don't subscribe to that? If it's good, if it's really good, I'll remember it.
Oh no, I don't. Yeah. Like dreams, my dreams will linger in my head when I wake up for about a minute, and then they're gone.
Yeah.
But I find myself like, I'll be at dinner sometimes with friends or, you know, and they might say something like, oh, that's a really good line. Let me write that. I'll grab the phone. My sister-in-law is very witty, and she has she actually gave me the hook line to one of the songs on the Mighty Love record that was like 2 years ago, but I had saved it. I tried to write a song to it. It didn't work. And then I came upon another idea where that hook, again, seemed to make a lot of sense. So, you know, that's where that one came from. So I'm always writing things down. I mean, I will be driving along and something will come in my head. I'll just pull like, you know, pull right over. And I tend to write lyrics first and then music. And I'll write lyrics like stream of consciousness, just like just write as much as I can about whatever subject I think I'm writing about. And then I'll go back later when I'm in the studio and pull up a Word doc and start looking at my phone. Okay, what did I write? What did I write? Is there a story here? Is there a hook here? How does a story flow? Can I sort of put things, you know, in the right order, the right place? And that's kind of how it starts. And then music will come to me as I read through the words. There will be a certain rhythmic flow. And so that's when the music starts to come about.
And what is that relationship like? Obviously, that bond between musicians and a duo is one thing. The bond between a couple is another. But just, I'm assuming you're writing stuff going, oh, Laura will take this and run with it, like vocally. I know she's going to kill it on this. And that bringing stuff together, feeding off each other's ideas and saying, well, let me help you and take this up. Or do you have that kind of collaboration, or is it much more protective? Don't you dare touch my song.
that would never go over. it is really more of a collaboration. I mean, I am writing the skeleton, the music and the words. But when I write, I'm always thinking of her voice. I'm always hearing her sing the song. She's a very tough critic. She has very high standards. So when I play songs for her, she probably turns down 2 out of every 3 songs I write for various reasons. Mm-hmm. So she's very tough. And in the very beginning of this whole process with her being sort of with me sort of taking over the bulk of the songwriting and she being more of what I would call the A&R person. Mm-hmm. She's the one who has to sing it. She has to connect to the song. Right. So in the beginning of it, when I had written a couple of songs, I played them for her, and she turned them down. And I'm like, come on, like, this part's right here, so good. She's like, look, you know, I've got very high standards. I want just the best songs for each record. So if you really love a song that I say no to, then you have to fight for it. So this song you just played for me, do you really love this song? I'm like, well, I like it a lot. I think it's got good parts, but I don't know if I could say I love it. And so that was a lesson learned for me and, you know, a small blow to my massive ego. And so I have learned for me, again, I'm sort of, like I said, I'm a quantity songwriter. And I expect that I'll write 20 to 30 songs to get 10 or 8 on a record.
Right.
So, I mean, as it is right now, for the next record we're working on, for next year, of the 6 songs that are in various stages of production, I wrote 4 myself. She wrote lyrics to 1. I wrote the music to that one. And our poet friend, Ren Winfield, wrote lyrics to another one, and I wrote the music. So there's, you know, different writers involved, yeah, different collaborating. And Laura, of course, not only initially when she hears a song where she says yes or no, but as we're doing the song, as we're tracking the song, the lyrics get changed. You know, mm-hmm. She'll, you know, in the middle of the track, she's like, you know what? You've got the word didn't 3 times in the first verse. Oh, well, let's change that, which I hadn't even noticed. Or she'll say, this isn't singing right. I want to shorten it. Or I don't quite like the way you're saying this. Let's think of a different way to say it. And we'll start pitching back and forth. So she's A&R, she's editor. You know, she plays a number of roles, even though she doesn't write the initial song.
Right. Well, because I noticed in one of the press releases, you said, well, I'm the technician, she's the magic. Is that that magic you mean, that what she's bringing to it?
Absolutely. Not only with her opinions and standards, but the singing. She's just, she just has it. Whatever it is, mm-hmm. she's got it. I mean, I knew it the first time I ever heard her sing. And I don't know, you know the backstory, which I'll be very brief about. I met her a long time ago when we first hooked up. I had a place to sing her wanted at. And of the 50 people that responded, I invited two of them over to the studio. They were the only people that I thought were any good. And she came in and sang one song for 3 minutes, turned off the tape deck, which was a tape deck back then in my studio. And I said, you're hired. She's never studied music. Like when we're working in the studio, I can't say to her, oh, try singing the fifth, go from like the fifth to the third, and then just scoop up to the fourth. That doesn't mean anything to her. But right. if I sing it to her once, she's like, okay, I got it. You know, so she understands it, she hears it. And I think that there are advantages to studying music and some disadvantages. The study of music for me, I use that every single day. When I'm talking to the other musicians or our mix engineers, you know, about the music, whatever we're discussing, there's math involved all the time. You know, go to the 6-9 chord there, like, you know, all that sort of thing. With her, it's just completely intuitive. She's just a natural. So she just brings this magic. And when we're tracking, it's like she's working on it. And I, of course, being the producer, I'm just looking for that emotional line, the emotional way she's going to perform something. And sometimes it'll come out in 2 minutes. Sometimes it might take half an hour. It just depends. But I'll know it when I hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll say, oh, sing it like this. And she'll kind of sing it like that, but then she kind of does sort of subconsciously these variations of the theme, and consistently, still, every time we're in the studio and she's tracking, there'll be, you know, moments where I just say, oh, I'm keeping that. Like, that takes great, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's a take that I couldn't really have thought of. It's reasonably close to what I might have suggested the melody should go like, but she just takes it way beyond. It's kind of like the same thing working with the drummer and the keyboardist on this new record. You know, I tell them I kind of give them a little bit. Well, I give the drummer a little bit of a roadmap, because when I send him stems, he's got drum loops. But I'm just telling him, play what you hear. Like, I want you to take me somewhere where I can't think of. You know, elevate the music. The first two records, I was kind of scoring keyboards. I don't really play piano very well. So the keyboard parts were relatively basic. But mm-hmm. on the Mighty Love record, I really wanted to elevate everything about it. The production, the way I was recording things. And we used a different drummer on the new record, like the drummer from the second record. He was really good. But he was unavailable, so we ended up using another guy who was a really good friend of one of our mix engineers, and he turned out to be just great, Randy Cook. But I asked him early on, I said, look, I need a keyboard player. I want a real player. He said, oh, contact my friend Dave. I think he was like the 2018 Nashville Music Row Musician of the Year. Oh, okay, that'll do.
Yeah.
So I contacted Dave and said, all right, let's try a couple songs. I sent him charts, I sent him the stems. I said, send me back MIDI so I can use my plugins. So he sends me back tracks. First of all, I asked him, like, well, so did you use my roadmap or my charts? He goes, no, I didn't need them. I said, great. Okay. And he also said, I sent you some MIDI tracks, but I also sent you audio waves of me playing my B3 in my studio, my grand piano, my Rhodes. I'm like, oh, okay. And those tracks, as good as the MIDI tracks were, those tracks he actually played better, because I guess it's because of the feel,
right,
the instrument, and the sound was so much better than any plugin I'm going to have. I mean, plugins sound great, but
yeah,
the real thing is the real thing, you know? And from that point onward, I would just send him stems and say, simply, play what you hear.
Mm-hmm.
Like on the song Sweet Spot, he sends me back, you know, organ and piano, and he played accordion on it. I never mentioned accordion, nothing. It fit perfectly. So it's kind of like with Laura, too. I mean, I'm just like, okay, here's, like, for her, I've got a specific melody that I had in place when I wrote the song.
Right.
But for her, it's just like, that's your jumping off point. You take it beyond. So that's the magic she brings.
Well, it's interesting. It sounds like, I mean, do you look at these studio recordings as the definitive versions of these songs, or do you look at them? I mean, like Dylan always is sort of talked about as someone saying kind of more of a Monet approach to say like, well, this is what this song feels like tonight when I play it. And, you know, or the Dead were very much like, the studio is a good place to start, but we're going to see what else we can do. But it sounds like as you're bringing in all these other instruments and working with other musicians doing their own arrangements, that you're trying to really create and build something that perhaps you didn't at first blush think of, and try to make something really special on these tracks.
Yeah. When I'm producing the songs and tracking them, I do have a sound vision in my head as to where I think they should end up. Fortunately for us, we have two really, really talented mix engineers, because that's the one thing. I mean, I can produce and track and engineer in the studio. Mixing is an art in of itself. These two guys are so good, and they take the songs that I mix or that I'm producing and just take them way beyond what I even hear in my head, which is really fantastic. I mean, they make me discover things in these songs that I really couldn't have thought of. They're in a sense sort of helping produce the tracks to a certain extent. I mean, I know all the pieces of the puzzle I'm creating, and they're able to just bring them out and provide clarity. That's part of the overall take on the songs. But I do think that the songs on the record are kind of where they are now and would provide a jumping off point if and when we have a full band to go out and play. We would start with, let's listen to the record, let's start with the parts that are there. But so far, when we perform live, it's Laura and myself. I'm playing one acoustic guitar and she's singing. So now the challenge becomes, how do we take these full band productions and boil it down to one acoustic guitar and one vocal? And that's where the songs get rediscovered or they change. So I think the songs on the record are a good snapshot of where they are at that point and what they should be with a full band. But when we're playing live, we might play as a duo, we may add a stand-up bass player and a drummer, and the songs become completely different. And it's fascinating to see. Like we played a gig for the first time with a bass player and a drummer a few months back, and it was it was so interesting to see what worked and what didn't work. And the song surprised you. There were a couple of songs I really loved that just didn't quite work live, at least in that format so far. And then a few others that I thought, okay, well, we'll throw these in. And it's like, oh my God, like the crowd loved them. And we really rocked, you know. It was like, it's the discovery is I think ongoing.
My Mighty Love by Three Pairs of Boots is available right now wherever you get your music. For more information, check out their websites, the number 3pairsofboots.com.
You can check us out on all the various socials. Be sure to visit our website at rockandrollgradschool.com. And don't forget to leave us a review.
Today's show is produced by myself and Heidi Hedquist. Our reluctant producers are John Sauvay and Sandy Stone. Our willing producers are Rachel Allen and Randy Jeanette. Our intern is Zach Jackson. This one's for Philippe. Thank you, good night, and may all your favorite bands stay together.